Sitting at the kids' table. Have you ever had to sit somewhere for a function where you like didn't want to be there? Not that you didn't want to be at the function, but where it was kind of a slap in the face to be seated where you were seated by someone? The worst seat in the house, perhaps. It's actually kind of a common trope in TV and movies and stories. And when I was reading our gospel lesson this morning, I couldn't help but think of a couple instances like this. And I'm sure as you're sitting here, you'll probably think of some that you have seen or heard or maybe even experienced in your own life, because we've all had the worst seat in the house at some point in time. For example, there's an old episode of Frasier where Frasier Crane and his brother, these, you know, they're very social guys, they're very fancy guys, they're well-to-do. They go to this really nice restaurant, really nice restaurant, and they are there talking to the maitre d', and Frasier is bumped from the wait list when someone more important than him comes along. And he is upset. He makes a scene. He demands a better seat. And when he is seated, he and his brother are relegated to a seat right in front of the men's restroom. He believes that this is above, or he is above such a place, and he makes a stink about it because of his social status. But, you know, there's nothing he can really do at that point. He's Dr. Frasier Crane. He believes he is not supposed to sit in such a crowded place and in such a bad location. He's got the worst seat in the house. I also can't help but think of in the show Friends. There's an episode where Chandler and Monica, they're getting married. And spoiler alert, if anybody wasn't aware of that. At the wedding reception, Ross, one of the friends, sees this woman named Mona. He's very attracted to her. The two of them seem to hit it off, but you know, it just seems like things keep getting in the way of them sitting next to one another. Ross tries to play matchmaker. He sees her table number at the reception where she's supposed to sit is like a 6. So he decides that he's going to switch his number. But it turns out her number is actually a 9. He mixes them up and he ends up sitting at the kids' table. So he's sitting there because of his own mistake, wanting to take the better seat. But that was not the plan. The kids' table is not the seat of honor. I also remember this old Super Bowl Doritos commercial. I promise I don't watch a ton of TV. I just remember these things. I had Doritos last night, too. I remember this Doritos commercial where this guy is rushing to get onto an airplane, okay? And he's looking for his seat. He's looking for his seat. And sure enough, he finds his seat. It's like dead smack in the middle of the wing. He's got like people on each side of him. On the one side, he's got a coffer, somebody that's coughing. On the other side, he's got this big guy who's hairy, who's clearly going to encroach on him if he's sitting there. He finally takes his seat, and there's a kid that's turning around and staring at him from behind. And then behind him, he's getting kicked. So it's like this worst possible seat imaginable. But then the big guy takes out this bag of Doritos, and it sweetens the deal. It becomes the seat of honor, really. That's a reversal there from being the worst seat in the house to the best seat in the house in just a minute. You know, I can think of a few weddings that I've done for people where I've been placed at this place where people clearly didn't know exactly what to do with me. Like, I wasn't close with the relatives, and I end up sitting in this weird cobbled-together table of all, like, the extra friends and family members. So we've all experienced this at some point in our lives, I'm sure. In our gospel story today, the reason why I mention this, we hear something kind of like this, where Jesus talks about seats of honor and the seat of disgrace, you know, the worst seat in the house, so to speak. He essentially says, when it comes to those seats of honor, you know, don't strive for those. Don't have that be your target. Don't go there first. You should want to sit in the nosebleed section. You should want to sit in front of the bathroom. You should want to sit back with the dishwashers or in the economy class or even at the kids' table. Because, in Jesus' own way of saying, he says, it's better to be raised up than to be taken down. And those words of Jesus, I think, they're not just meant to be a polite invitation for us to, you know, think about how to conduct ourselves at the next wedding or the next plane that we're sitting on or at a dinner party or something like that, or even as a host of a party. But I think rather they have to deal with what it means to be a person of faith, what it means to be a person of faith. We could all learn something from this. So I want to talk about our story from Luke today and what it might mean for us, especially as Christians living in the United States in the 21st century. So let's talk a little bit about that. So, if you haven't gathered this by this point in the Gospels, Jesus loved to eat. He loved to eat, and he loved to drink, and he loved to hang out with people. And he oftentimes would hang out with people that were unexpected. Here, he's hanging out with a Pharisee, one of the religious leaders who was largely adversarial. We don't know who this particular one is, but throughout most of the Gospels, the Pharisees are kind of like, they're set up as the fall guy. They're kind of the enemy in some way. They're the religious elite. And in many ways, Jesus is not the religious elite. So while Jesus is dining with this unnamed Pharisee leader, he notices how the guests take the best seats in the house. And who wouldn't do this, right? You notice that there's the first class seat that's open on the plane, and you're, let's say you're on Spirit Aircraft, and they're like, yeah, you know, first come, first serve. Yeah, heck yeah, I would sit in the nicest seat in the house, right? Well, Jesus basically says, don't sit down in the seat of honor when you're invited to a wedding banquet or a party. Because if someone more distinguished than you comes along, and then the host has to come up and ask you to move, it's going to disgrace you. Imagine having to be moved from one seat to the next because you sat in the wrong place or because somebody came along that was more important to you. It sounds like it would be embarrassing, right? Yeah, I think that would be embarrassing, being asked to move. Being asked to move. Now, in our country, this has happened. This has happened. Think of in the during the civil rights times when people were bumped to the back of the bus, you know, or those that have been asked to leave certain areas. So this may be an experience that maybe friends and family members have experienced, hits a little close to home. But in case it isn't, I'll give you an example. This comes from back in 2002. I remember watching it was the VMA Music Awards. I'm not so much into those now. But it was a video music ceremony. This was back when Michael Jackson was alive. And he began to give this acceptance speech, thinking that he had been awarded this Artist of the Millennium Award. He was called out, during the service, basically a spotlight shined on him, and whoever the MC was said, we want to recognize the Artist of the Millennium, Michael Jackson. Everybody cheered, and he got up and like walked up to the microphone. But that was not part of the plan. He was simply being recognized as like the Artist of the Millennium. He wasn't getting an award. And he grabbed onto some award that was like on the podium. And it was embarrassing. It was embarrassing. He simply was being recognized, but he made a mistake. It was this gaffe. So he was basically asked to sit back down. And they were just a little shy of getting one of those big hook things and pulling him off the stage. But it was embarrassing for the guy. Okay, and basically he had to go and take his seat. He wasn't actually asked to go up there and do what he did. Jesus says instead of sitting at the seat of honor, you are to sit at the lowest place so that when the host comes to you and says, move to a better seat, it brings you great honor. It doesn't bring you that embarrassment, that shame of being pulled down. All who exalt themselves will be humbled, he says, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. In other words, as I said, it's better to be lifted up than be being brought down. The first will be last, and the last will be first. That's really another way of saying this, and another way that Jesus kind of drives it home for us that this is what we're supposed to be doing. In a sense, Jesus is telling us through all of this, through this simple party etiquette story, about what it means to be a person of faith. And that's why I think it's so applicable to each of us. To follow him means being humble. It means looking out for the well-being of other people before our own. It means that you do the opposite of what you would do on a plane. You know, when you're watching those instructional videos that say, make sure you secure your own mask first before your neighbor. That means you actually do secure your neighbor's mask first. Not in that situation. But that's really what Jesus is saying. Watch out for the other before you necessarily secure your own self first. To follow him means being humble. It means looking out for the well-being of others. It means you focus on making sure others have a seat before trying to secure your own seat at the table. I can't help but think of what it is like now in our home with our two kids. Just a couple days ago, we had a ring bologna for dinner, and I know what my parents probably felt like with the five boys at home now, because we always end up letting the kids get the first crack at the food before we do. And they can take down about 3/4 of this ring bologna before Sonia and I get a little chunk of it to ourselves. So it's about taking care of thee rather than me. That's what Jesus is saying. Taking care of thee rather than me. And this is really countercultural to much what we hear about in our culture of my way or the highway, or even when we hear about America First. When we then hear that Jesus turns to the host of the dinner party and says something else. He says, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, don't invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or your rich neighbors because they might invite you in return and you would be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. Invite these folks. You know, it's important, I think, to note that the people Jesus says to invite to the party, the people he says to invite to the dinner, they are folks of worth and integrity and value, and they were thought of very differently in his culture, in that they absolutely relied on someone taking care of them. They were thought of as powerless individuals that should be pitied rather than lifted up and embraced as an equal sibling. In his culture, before much of the medical advancements that we have for assisting persons with disabilities and helping them gain independence, many of the folks that he named, those that could not walk, the blind, and so on, they relied explicitly on the help of others. So in a sense, it would be expected that these persons would not be persons of privilege and power back in his day. And Jesus says, these are the folks you're supposed to invite to the party. Have you ever invited somebody to a party or a social event because of their social status and because they could return the favor? Have you ever sent out like an invite to someone knowing that they're definitely not going to be able to show up to something, but maybe because they're going to send a gift or a present? Well, in a sense, that's what Jesus is saying. He's saying, don't do that. Invite the people that can't be expected to pay you back, or those that can't give you some sort of reward socially or materially. He's essentially saying, when you host a party, don't invite people that will return the favor, but invite the people that can't. Don't be so focused on inviting the right family or the donor to dinner, but rather invite the person that can't pay you back anything. Because this is what it means to be a person of faith. Instead of inviting the rich aunt or uncle to your wedding, invite the poor cousin. Take care of thee rather than me. And then Jesus says, when you invite people that can't pay you back, you'll be blessed, because they can't repay you, for you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. You know, when Jesus says all this stuff about sitting in the right places and inviting people who can't pay you back to dinner parties and stuff, he's not offering up just some advice about party etiquette or something like that, but he's really talking big picture. And let me help you see that picture. He says, when you are a person of faith who are walking in his footsteps, you approach life differently. You are invited to walk humbly when our culture tells you to puff out your chest and be proud. You're invited by our scripture to reconsider motives and goals as individuals, maybe as a church, as a nation. We're invited by our gospel to focus on thee rather than me, even though we hear we should look out for person number one all the time in our society. We are invited to take care of the other before ourselves, because we can't recognize that we have been blessed to be a blessing for others unless we do it. And there's an abundance when it comes to the message of scarcity that is beat into us by our culture. An abundance of blessing that we have when it comes down to it deep down inside. And we are like those people that Jesus names off who can't repay someone for the dinner invitation when it comes down to it. Because when you think of the life that he offers by defeating death and the invitation to the life beyond, There's nothing we could really ever do to repay that debt. And what his death and resurrection does for us in this life, in freeing us from worrying about death being the end. And that is a gift that can never be paid back. And that's a party invitation that, you know, we can never one up. So for each of us, I think this might mean something really important. It might make us question how we can open up our church and our homes to people who are exploring their faith or their spirituality. It might make us wonder how we warm our homes to people that may not have something in common with us, that we might not get something out of. How do we reach out to guests and visitors in this place in a way so it doesn't feel like we are always asking for something in return? I think if we take to heart what Jesus says, I think it's really a start for us, because we can open our doors here as a church and invite our neighbors without expectation of something in return, other than meeting new people and welcoming them and really meaning it. So my prayer for us today, as we digest these words about this dinner party and this etiquette, is that we continue our worship and we remember that the grace of God has no limited invites. It's unlimited. And there aren't so many seats, just a handful of them on the list or something like that. It never fills up. The grace of God is always overflowing. Everybody is a guest of honor, not just the rich and the elite and the beautiful and the powerful and whatever. So we should share in the abundance that we have rather than focusing on ourselves and where we sit at the party and what we gain for others in this life. May we humble ourselves. May we even take a seat at the kids' table, even if it isn't the best one in the house. And may we focus on the needs of others before ourselves. Amen.